Wine is unlike anything else that I can think of.
Sometimes with all the glitz and glamour of Napa, we forget this whole thing is based on families growing grapes, you know?
Potentially, this is a fantastic year, but anything can change on a dime, right?
And everything's good in life, you just have to make a natural judgment, not be too tricky in your mind. I like it, I don't like it.
Davis himself thinks that it's kind of a big load of hooey. People probably use more than maybe two or three descriptors for a wine. He just thinks they're just making it up.
I kind of fired myself. I mean, I couldn't be a one-man operation forever.
There's always something to do. There's replanting, there's barrels, there's maintenance.
Because so many people use mobile bottling lines right now, and everything has to come, the labels, the corks, everything has to come together at the same time and be there when the truck shows up.
Being able to grow up in wine, you have this passion and love for wine and the culture of wine, and everything else sort of pales in comparison.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 250. This week we feature Alberto Medici of Medici Wines, Italy.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
We visited Chicago once again for this year's Cobrand tasting and managed to get in a few interviews. For this program, we feature Alberto Medici of Medici Wines. Alberto is one of those wine people that are just a joy to interview. He has a great sense of humor combined with a true passion for wine. This podcast was recorded at the Peninsula Hotel in Chicago. I'm here with Alberto Medici. Did I get the emphasis?
Yes, perfect.
That's because you just said it. That's why. And you're with, of course, Medici is your winery.
Yes.
And we're here in Chicago for the Cobrand tasting. So first off, how are you today?
I'm fine. Fantastic. Everything looks great. We are in a fantastic location. Great day. Great people.
And you have a big tour ahead of you.
This is the first stop of a long tour. We are going to stop in eight towns around the United States. So it's going to be exciting.
Isn't that kind of hard to be away during harvest for you? Or is that a pleasure being away from harvest?
No, I'm a little bit worried, but thanks God, I have my father still active in the winery, which is 80 years old, but long experience, who is supervising the harvest. So I feel my shoulder covered.
I would think because he's 80 because of the winery, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and because he drinks a lot of Lambrusco.
And that's what I want to talk about. I just tasted your wine a little while ago, and they were superb. You were mentioning this idea of being the least scariest wine out there. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Lambrusco is a very approachable and friendly wine. It's a wine which is designed to go with food, to pair with food. And to be honest with you, Italy is a food country, but the area where I come from, Emilia-Romagna, is called the capital of food in Italy. It's called the food valley, the food basket of Italy. So the food that we have pairs fantastically with Lambrusco. And, when a wine can make a great cuisine, I think that it's a great wine.
I would agree with that. And I have to tell you, having just been there, food, oh my.
Yeah, it's part of our culture, you know.
It was wonderful. What part of the country are you in?
Emilia-Romagna is the region. The capital of the region is Bologna. And it's an area where the lifestyle is so great and fantastic. Not because just food, but because of fashion, for instance. Max Mara, Giorgio Armani, born in Emilia-Romagna. Music, Giuseppe Verdi, Luciano Pavarotti. What else? Oh, car industry.
Really?
Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati. I don't know if you ever heard of
this. I
think
I've heard of Ferrari once.
Yeah.
Maserati, sure, yeah.
They come from Modena, which is in the center of the region. So, you know, it's a good part where you want to live, where you want to be.
Is that where you grew up?
Yes. It's where my family grew up. And for 120 years, we've been devoted to produce wine and to produce Lambrusco, which is this red, fizzy, sparkling, refreshing, fruited wine.
And I don't think a lot of people realize that. That's what makes it kind of, where you break into a smile when you take that first sip, because you're not always expecting that, are you?
You know, when I pour a glass of Lambrusco, people start smiling immediately, you know, because they see this fizzy, foaming, red, purple wine. And I can see a smile in their face immediately. And then the wine makes the rest, you know. It's so refreshing, it's so fruited, it's so approachable.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the Lambrusco, from vine to bottle, isn't a terribly long process, is it?
It's, you need two fermentations instead of one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, exactly. The first fermentation is just the normal alcoholic fermentation. The second fermentation is carried on in a closed space, closed area. It could be a bottle, could be a tank. So during the second fermentation, the alcohol is naturally transformed into sugar and bubbles. So they cannot evaporate, so they stay there. So it's a natural process. It's longer, but it's all natural.
Okay, so I had that totally wrong. So it's a different process for
It's
for
a different
wine.
Process, yeah.
That helps.
Yeah.
Alcohol content?
Alcohol content is very reasonable. It's usually around 11.5 for the Secco version, for the dry version, 8% for the sweet one. So extremely reasonable alcohol content.
It's something you can enjoy a little more of and not be really worried about. Yeah, that's great. So, as you were saying before, and I asked you where this was in the country, physically, what part of Italy
it's,
am I looking at?
It's Emilia-Romagna is located more or less to the north of Italy, and it's in the middle of a magic triangle wine-wise, Piemonte, Veneto, and Tuscany. We are just in the middle.
I like that you call it a magic area.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, when you grow up in wine country, it's magic in general, isn't it? Was your family a winemaking family, I'm assuming, because of your dad?
Yes. My great-grandfather founded the winery, and this was end of 1890, so over 120 years ago. And then my grandfather, Ermete, which gave the name to the winery, Medici Ermete, is the one who promoted and made the marketing of the winery and started enlarging the distribution. My father started to export the wine outside of Italy, and today we export our wine to over 70 countries around the world.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and actually my great-grandfather started, it's a very strange situation. He wanted to produce the wine for its own restaurants, because my great-grandfather owned 3 restaurants, and it was like a domestic production for its own restaurants. But then the restaurants were so successful that we increased the distribution to other restaurants, and this is how the winery started.
You know, that's not really, and that in as a long run, I don't know if that's all that unusual, because in so many wine growing areas, for restaurants, you want that locally grown wine because there's that intimacy, right?
Exactly. He wanted to have his own wine produced by himself. So this is how he started. Actually, my great-grandfather had 2 sons and 3 beautiful daughters. So he sent the 3 beautiful daughters to run the floor of the restaurants. This is why they were so successful, probably, because he knew already the marketing idea of attracting customers, you know.
He figured it out.
Yeah. And the 2 sons he sent to the state to produce the wine for the restaurants.
Nice. It was good thinking.
Yeah, the clear ideas.
Yeah, very clear. Growing up, was there any other choice for you, or was that what you were determined you wanted to do?
When I was 18 years old and my father every day was telling me, you have to do the winemaker, probably many boys of that age, You want to do something different, just as a reaction. But then, as soon as you get close to that kind of business, Lambrusco attracts so much that Lambrusco wine attracts so much that you are immediately involved to it, attracted to it. So it happened very easily, and then I'm committed 100% to it. My son actually is gonna start the 1st of October working in the winery as well.
Well, that's great. How old's your son?
He's 22 and he's graduating next week.
So he waited a little while too then, maybe.
Exactly.
So that would be your fourth generation, is that right?
He's going to be the fifth
generation.
Alessandro, yeah.
Very nice. Congratulations. You've got to be very proud of that.
Very proud.
I can see it on your face. That's very nice. So I got to ask you a question I'm curious about, and this is one thing I didn't get to find out when I was over there. During World War II, that must have been a very, very difficult time to carry on. That probably would have been your grandfather at that point,
yes,
right?
So yes, exactly.
To be able to carry on this kind of a business.
Was very, absolutely very difficult. But thanks God, it became also an opportunity because the country needed food and needed wine, you know. And wine was part of the diet at that time. So if you had a good connection in terms of distribution, it could have been also a good opportunity because it was an emerging business. So, and I think they've been very skilled to increase their distribution and to make it as an opportunity in a very, very tough moment.
That's a smart way to go about it, the whole idea of, you know, being able to capitalize on something like that, especially during a difficult time.
Absolutely. And thanks God my family had also other business activity, and they could support the vineyards and the winery as well, thanks to other activities.
Are the restaurants still in business?
Unfortunately not, because then the core business
wine took over.
Yeah, exactly. So we quit, and probably today they are still one of them, and it's an osteria, but the other two are not there anymore, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
Too bad.
But on the other hand, wine is a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And a lot of hard work.
We can't complain. A lot of hard work, a lot of praying God in order to give us good weather, and but it's very exciting type of job.
Yeah, Mother Nature's not very forgiving, is she?
No.
Do you have other siblings, brothers and sisters? In the?
I have a sister, Alessandra. She takes care of the hospitality because we have estates where a lot of tourists come to visit. And also, I was telling you that our area is very famous for food as well. Within one of these estates, we have a production of balsamic vinegar, but top balsamic vinegar, which is called tradizionale, traditional one, which is aged minimum 12 years. So you make something very aged, very complex, very thick. So it's completely different to the balsamic vinegar that you may find on the market. It's something very special.
Especially in the United States. Do you export that to the States at all? Or no?
The amount of production we have is so small that Cobran sometimes asks us if we can supply some, but we don't have availability of.
Isn't that tough when you're making something so beautiful?
Yeah, people ask for it, but you don't have it.
Yeah, it's nice to be wanted, but it's even nicer to supply it when you can. Yeah.
But I always say that part of the business is more a cost than an income, because, you know, it's a center of cost, because you need just passion to do it. If you think the cost you have is just, you forgive it, you forget it, so you don't go ahead. It's just too expensive to produce it. But it's, you know, it's part of our tradition, so.
That's nice. Have you ever gotten into olive oil at all, or no?
Olive oil?
Olive oil?
No. Our area is not as good as Tuscany or other areas. For olives.
Sure. So let me ask you this, you know, considering again my recent trip, have you been experiencing the drought as well?
Oh yeah, this year has been tough.
Yeah.
It's been very tough, especially around July and August. We didn't see rain at all. So it has been a pretty difficult year in terms of quantity produced. For some of the variety that we grow, we are harvesting about 50% less than what we normally harvest.
That's a lot.
It's tough. It's really tough. But the product that we are harvesting is amazing.
So that helps.
This helps, but you know, when you have a so big lack of grapes, it's gonna be a tough year.
Comes back to this idea of being in demand.
Exactly.
About how many cases are you doing?
So we do around the world, the total production is around 60,000-70,000 cases. Oh,
so that's a good size.
Yes, it's a pretty good size.
And about how much of that do you export to the States?
Total, in the total exports, we export about 70% of the total production, and in the States it's 10-12%.
Right, that's nice.
Yeah.
What I was tasting, the two Labruscas I tasted,
yeah.
Do you know what those retail for by any chance?
So the first one, the most inexpensive one, retails for $14, and the top one is $22.
Very accessible prices.
Very accessible price.
Oh, that's what it's all about.
And Lambrusco is an everyday wine.
Yes, it is. Yeah,
it's an everyday, very affordable, as we were saying, very approachable, very friendly.
So what else were you pouring at the table? I had to walk away because other people were coming up, so I didn't want to manipulate you there.
We have another product which is produced with two varieties called Solo, which is a blend of Lambrusco again and an indigenous grape variety called Ancelotta. Ancelotta smooths down the acidity of the Lambrusco and brings out the fruitness and the freshness. It's a little bit more tannic than a normal Lambrusco. And the other one is a Lambrusco Dolce. And Lambrusco Dolce means that it's sweeter than the others. So the residual content, the residual sugar is higher, but the acidity is so high and the sweetness is so well blended in the acidity that is turned into freshness and fruitness. So you don't feel it too sweet at all.
So it's not like a aperitif, a dessert wine or anything
no,
like that?
No.
No, that's
it, great. You can drink it along with food, with casual food like tapas, pizzas. It's fantastic.
Excellent. Well, I know you got to get back to the tasting here in a few minutes, and I do appreciate you taking the time. For our listeners to learn about you online, how would they do that?
On the web?
Yes.
Our website is www.medici.it.
Great. So you're easy to find and you're
very easy to find
in the States.
And available through Cobrands in the States.
Alberto, this has been a lot of fun talking to you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, a great pleasure.
I don't have a drink, so I say salute.
Salute to you, those who are listening.
Learn more by visiting medici.it/en.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our intern is John Chacon. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.